Item N that was scheduled regarding telephonic appearances has been removed from the agenda so that further comments can be obtained to clarify a possible error. We will turn then to item O, which is the report of the Task Force on Criminal Justice Collaboration on Mental Health Issues. Final report, it's an action item. We have Justice Hill from the 5th District. And Judge Kingsbury is going to join us by phone. Is that right, Justice Hill?
In fact, I think I just heard her join.
Doesn't sound like her.
I'm here.
Oh.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hello. I'm going to go on mute till you're ready for me.
Very good. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you very much. It's nice to be with you this afternoon. I know it's been a long day for all of you, so we will get right to it. It's been my honor to have chaired this task force. We have been at this for about 3.5 years. And we were charged with making recommendations to better deal with mentally ill offenders in our courts. It's a problem that has been increasing in scope for the last 5 to 10 years, and we have found that courts across our state are grappling with how to deal with its ever-presence at every stage of the proceedings. Now, in an era of budget uncertainty, we are keenly aware that some of our recommendations will need to await a better budget climate. However, our charge was to be both aspirational as well as to be certainly grounded in today's financial reality. Our jails in California have now become more like a de facto mental health system in most of our counties. For instance, in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles jail is often cited as housing more people with mental illness than almost all of the largest psychiatric treatment facilities across our country. Now, many of the recommendations in our report require really little but cooperation by and among agencies in the state of California. And if our task force is any indication, it can be done, and it can be done well. We had 33 task force members around that table with wildly divergent interests. Yet by all accounts, these individuals were able to produce a comprehensive report that will allow our courts to be better able to deal with this rapidly growing population. For instance, sitting at the table was the director of our prison system, the director of mental health for the state of California, the state director of alcohol and drug programs, county mental health directors, representatives of the Public Defenders Association, the DA's Association, the Sheriff's Association, the Police Chiefs Association, court execs, CSAC, various consumer groups, including mental health advocates and family support groups, representatives of the legislature, joined by a distinguished group of 12 judges from across the state, from large courts, medium-sized courts, and small courts, with years of experience in the mental health area. All of these people set aside their parochial interests and arrived at a far-reaching report that will serve as a blueprint for reform in the coming years. Nothing we recommend today is intended as a mandate, but rather we hope that it sets the stage for further discussions between the courts, large and small, and the many components of this complex system. Four of our subcommittee chairs are with us today to very briefly share an overview of their particular areas. It was such a pleasure working with all of them, with Judges Morgan, Manley, Cumley, and Kingsbury. The time that they spent on this task force, certainly just in telephonic conferences alone, was staggering. They would spend hour upon hour going through recommendations, and when you have 137 recommendations, you can only imagine how much fine-tuning and how many telephonic conferences there were. But their dedication was inspirational, and we can't thank them enough for all that they did. At this time, perhaps Judge Kingsbury could take herself off mute and kick off the proceeding and tell us about her particular subcommittee. Suzanne?
Oh, thank you. Good afternoon, Chief and Council members. I'm sorry to be appearing by phone, but I'm just recovering from surgery, and I have another meeting coming up next week and thought I would spare myself the drive and the taxpayers the money. I was the subcommittee chair for prevention, early intervention, and diversion programs, and we had a very diverse group and probably in many ways had the most difficult time coming to some consensus about our recommendations. And most surprisingly, after we spent time together, we found that there were a lot of different things that we could agree on and recommend. And we also all had the goal of keeping people from ever entering the criminal justice system in the first instance, if that was indeed an option. Most of the recommendations that we've included in this section are outside the direct purview of the Judicial Council. However, we all recognize as a task force that systemic early intervention programs in the community are critical if we want to try to connect people to housing, treatment, and other services before they enter the criminal justice system. And it was everyone's belief that if they had some of those services, many of the folks that we see might not enter into the first instance. Committee members believe that courts can play a leadership role either by convening stakeholders or participating in discussions and local planning efforts which are designed to improve options and outcomes for those who have a mental illness and are at risk for entering the criminal justice system. The recommendations in the prevention, early intervention, and diversion section focus on community-based services and early intervention strategies that reduce the number of individuals with mental illness who enter the criminal justice system. The members of my subcommittee included representatives of County Mental Health, the State Department of Mental Health, and CSAC. We all agreed that intervention at the earliest point of contact was important, and that the recommendations outlined in the report help provide a framework for setting up local planning teams so that each community and each court can tailor a system that works within the resources that are available there. We also recommended expansion and coordination of community-based services that can help prevent people with mental illness from entering the criminal justice system, which might include things such as developing community crisis centers, which are open 18 to 24 hours a day as opposed to having people go to a jail, neighborhood or community regional treatment services operating more hours a day, eligibility workers who could help an individual access services before they're in crisis, and so on. Besides providing access to mental health services, we should also focus on income maintenance, housing, health care, veteran services, et cetera. Simply co-locating services seems to be a very effective practice in many communities and costs very little. Local law enforcement and mental health organizations should continue to expand the development and utilization of crisis intervention teams, mobile crisis teams, and psychiatric emergency response teams to effectively manage incidents that require responses by law enforcement officers. These teams provide mental health expertise through specially trained police officers or through mental health professionals who accompany officers to the scene. Smaller counties, which are unable to assemble response teams, should consider alternative options such as mental health training module for all cadets and officers. POST has recently started training in this area, and many law enforcement agencies are now providing continuing education training to their officers in this area. Programs and practices which are considered to be best practice models should be adopted in an effort to effectively utilize diminishing resources and improve outcomes. For example, we know, based on anecdotal and other evidence, that crisis intervention programs work. As part of the early intervention and community diversion efforts, we recommend drawing upon community and family resources such as the California Network of Mental Health Clients, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, which is NAMI California, and peer support programs. The more resources and collaborative partnerships that are available at a local level, the better. Community partners also have to advocate together so that funding is provided at a consistent and sustainable level. Most importantly, we felt that discharge planning protocols should be created for people released from state and local psychiatric hospitals and other residential facilities through collaborations among hospitals, community-based agencies, and pharmacies to ensure that no one is released to the streets without linkage to community services and stable housing. Discharge planning should begin upon facility entry to support a successful transition to the community that may prevent or minimize future interactions with the criminal justice system. You'll be hearing more about the importance of discharge planning when Judge Manley speaks later. Committee members felt that their recommendations could be implemented at the local level if criminal justice and their mental health, drug and alcohol, and social service partners form new partnerships and look for new ways to solve mutual problems. Early intervention planning can help prevent individuals from entering into the more costly criminal justice system. This will help save lives, save families, and help ensure that individuals receive appropriate and sustainable care. So in summary, community-based services and early intervention strategies that reduce the number of individuals with mental illness who enter the criminal justice system would include expanding and coordinating community-based services that can help prevent people with mental illness from entering the criminal justice system, and training for local law enforcement, and creation and expansion of pre-booking diversion programs. And I think that basically summarizes my comments. Thank you, Justice Hill and members of the council.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Morgan. I'm from the San Francisco Superior Court, recently retired. So criminal courts are confronted with an array of very unique problems when dealing with persons who are mentally ill. Proceedings are often significantly delayed if a person is found to be incompetent to stand trial. Dispositions are often complex and time-consuming to achieve when judges and lawyers are ill-prepared and find it very difficult to find answers about what to do with a particular person in a particular situation, how best to protect public safety, how to ensure that a person doesn't come back into the criminal justice system. Legal proceedings that involve the mental status of a defendant are often complicated and unusual for judges and lawyers who haven't had adequate training in those areas. And the involvement of many public and private agencies is often necessary in order to craft a plan for a defendant that sufficiently addresses his or her mental health needs. So all of the recommendations in the court response section attempt to address these issues and are based on promising or best practices, many of which have been proven to be effective in reducing cost, lowering recidivism, and producing better mental health outcomes for the defendants. The recommendations have been shown to be applicable to small, medium, and large courts. The first set of recommendations concern the importance of judicial leadership, which is key to bringing together the many stakeholders and attempting to craft programs that are court-based to address these kinds of problems. It is significant that we all agreed that these kinds of programs should be based on our collaborative justice principles. The second set of recommendations about case processing have to do with the recognition that courts of all size greatly benefit from having some kind of specialized method of dealing with adjudicating cases where the defendant is mentally ill. These methods can range from a full-fledged mental health court to a particularly specialized calendar in one of many calendars in a particular court, and that whatever the response is, it should recognize the need that you have to go an extra inch or even mile in order to address the needs of these kinds of defendants. And the particular solution should be based on the needs and the resources of the individual county. The third set of recommendations has to do with coordinating civil and criminal proceedings where a person is mentally ill. Sometimes a person who has already been civilly conserved has a pending criminal case. Sometimes a person who has a pending criminal case is subsequently conserved. It's our recommendation that there should be some kind of coordination between these two sets of proceedings in order to avoid orders that are in conflict and in order to achieve the best treatment and supervision for defendants. The fourth set of recommendations involves those complicated proceedings where a person is incompetent to stand trial. Courts of all sizes will greatly benefit from improving the procedures and treatment of persons who are found to be incompetent to stand trial. Thorough psychiatric evaluations and alternative community placements can help reduce unnecessary commitments to state hospitals. Regular and ongoing meetings and conversations between courts and the Department of Mental Health and state hospitals will facilitate cooperation and solution to mutual problems. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Judge Stephen Manley from the Santa Clara County Superior Court. And my subcommittee on the of the Mental Health Task Force focused on incarceration, parole, probation, community reentry, and, of course, sentencing, both initially and at the revocation time. I would just like to point out that the members of my subcommittee broadly represented the major stakeholders in criminal justice, including not only the present Secretary of CDCR, Secretary Kate, but former Secretary Tilton, the leadership of the Probation Officer, Probation Chiefs Association, Public Defender, District Attorney, Parole, every aspect of the criminal justice system involved in these areas, including the sheriffs, who were very, very interested in coming together and working towards a consensus. Many of our recommendations that you will find in that section, those sections, are very aspirational. We all understand that we do not have the present resources to do a lot of things that are recommended. However, there was a desire by all members of this subcommittee that we move forward, even the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, which is not generally associated with the superior courts at the local levels. I think it's important to understand that our basic, the recommendations come from three basic principles. The first one being that we do need to consider alternatives to simply punishment and incarceration, that there are too many offenders incarcerated, the burden on the jails, the burden on parole and probation, and the courts. We need to find other ways and at least explore them. Everyone also recognizes, and a basis of our recommendations is, that everything begins in the community and it goes back to the community where the mentally ill offender lives. So many of our mentally ill offenders, as studies show, were in community treatment before they ended up in the criminal justice system. And so we take that into account and feel very strongly that we must promote these relationships between the community providers of mental health treatment and substance abuse, because so many of these offenders have co-occurring disorders. Our third principle, very basically, was that we ourselves, as judges, probation officers, parole agents, sheriffs, must change our approach and look for other alternatives. And therefore, what we arrived at was a basic concept that this is a continuum. The individual is in the community mentally ill. They end up going through our court system. They go back to the community, whether they go to prison or probation. And if we look at it that way, then our view is that there should be a discharge plan. In other words, every person convicted and sent to jail or prison, or not sent to jail or prison, placed on probation, is going back to the community at some point. And that if we don't address this immediately when they go into jail from the first day of booking and incarceration, we do not begin to understand the problem. So we call for an assessment to immediately start treatment when people are placed into custody. that we, for example, one of our strong recommendations that we all agree on is that we need uniform formularies so that the mentally ill offenders are taking the same medications, and that we aren't having people denied the medication that works for them because they happen to be in a jail as opposed to a prison, as opposed to in community mental health. In addition to that, we recognize that benefits are critical. So many of the homeless mentally ill have no benefits at all or rely entirely on benefits. Benefits are cut off when one is incarcerated. If we look at the long range, we need to get those benefits reinstated, and we all have an interest in working together to see that that happens at the earliest point that it is legally permitted. And that begins at the time they're booked into jail to start that process, because it is not a short one. We believe that when inmates are released from jail or prison, that they must be given medications or immediately connected where they can get medications and treatment on release, or they will quickly decompensate and be back in custody. So we strongly support, all of us, that we find ways to make sure they have medications and they connect with treatment. Mental health needs to be involved in our jails. In other words, we need to have the community come in. They know these clients. They work with them. We see them as defendants, as parolees, probationers, but they see them as clients that they have worked with in the community. They need to reconnect with them before they're ever released. And we recognize that's literally impossible in the present prison system. But the concept is real, because when they come back to us after they're released from prison, they come back in through a county jail on a new arrest. And then we need to put this discharge plan together and include a critically important element, and that is housing. We have to have treatment, but we also have to have housing for the mentally ill. That discharge plan will then move on to the judge, not to control what the judge does, but simply as a tool for the judge to use at the time of sentencing. That plan would then move on as the defendant moved into the community, and it would be available, it would be amended and changed by probation or parole agents or probation officers. They would use a risk and needs assessment that we recommend to determine which offenders need the highest level of treatment, which defendants are the highest risk to reoffend, which ones should we concentrate on. And there would need to be training, we recognize that, for everyone, judges, parole agents, probation officers, to better understand working with the mentally ill and how to motivate them, so that we are not always in the position of having only one alternative, and that being incarceration repeatedly. Because the mentally ill offenders, we do know from all the research, decompensate when they're out of custody and quickly return to our system. And so we want to have alternative responses, including our 41 mental health and behavioral health courts that Judge Morgan mentioned throughout California, and other creative systems outside of our existing system to come up with an alternative for those who are at high risk to go back into custody. And we also want probation officers and parole agents to use other methods of working with criminal justice mentally ill offenders than simply booking them back into jail and placing parole holds, for example. So many parole holds are the result simply of a mentally ill offender decompensating and not being returned to treatment and to receiving their medications. In sum, what I think was most impressive about our subcommittee is that the real commitment to change was coming not from the judges on the committee, it was from all the other stakeholders and the desire to continue to work together. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Kurt Cumley from the Santa Clara County Superior Court, and I was the chair of the Juvenile Justice Subcommittee. Everything that you've heard this afternoon about prevention and early intervention in court systems and probation, parole, and incarceration applies equally, if not more so, to juvenile justice. And, in fact, one of the areas that we struggled with on our subcommittee was which portions of the report should we segregate and place separately in a juvenile justice piece. And which portions should we attempt to integrate into the regular report? Because so much of what you have heard here, as the result of the comments of the other subcommittee chairs, apply equally, if not more so, to young offenders, folks under the age of 18. But there is, in addition to everything that's been said so far, an additional sense of urgency when you were dealing with juvenile justice. And there is a greater fiscal imperative, if you will. For those of you that have had the privilege of working in juvenile delinquency, you know that mental health is not particularly well defined, and it is the proverbial 500-pound gorilla in your courtroom in that you sense it when it is there. It is there frequently more often than folks realize, but once it is acknowledged, no one is quite sure what to do with it, and then once you figure out what to do with it, the infrastructure to deal with it appropriately simply doesn't exist. And so that really was the charge of our committee. Unlike Judge Kingsbury, our group had very little difficulty reaching consensus as to the issues. In fact, one of the few areas where we did have a problem reaching consensus was a determination of what percentage of young offenders actually have a diagnosable mental illness. We put in the report, according to a 2006 study, that was 70.4%. There are certainly reports, depending upon how you define mental illness, to suggest that it's higher, certainly with respect to female offenders. But for all of the time that we spent trying to attach a number to the prevalence of mental illness within the delinquency population, issues that really became the meat of our report began to precipitate out. For example, how do you define mental illness within the delinquency population? And if that definition is too broad, then the systemic response is going to be too vague. And frankly, given the era in which we live and work, it's not going to be cost effective. What we need to do, and what our subcommittee determined to be the most important piece of applying a new mental health paradigm to juvenile justice, is to improve assessment at the front end and to really affix as early as possible into the system an appropriate and meaningful mental health diagnosis, not only with respect to who has what particular affliction, but how that is dealt with. Because, again, for those of you that have worked within the system, you know that once a diagnosis is made, the dosage is frequently misapplied. And how much mental health treatment applies is as important as determining simply the diagnosis and the treatment itself. The other point with respect to juvenile justice is what do you do when a kid leaves the jurisdiction of your court? And so the aftercare and reentry portion became a critical piece. And we don't want, and I don't want to suggest that our report suggests, that the juvenile justice system should become a de facto mental health system for everyone in the state under 18. In fact, to the contrary, we would hope that involvement in the juvenile justice system, when mental health issues arise, actually expedites those folks' exit from their system successfully. But that requires assessment, it requires appropriate treatment, it requires educating the players within the system, whether it's probation, law enforcement, court system partners, or simply bringing in mental health professionals in a more meaningful way into the juvenile justice system. And finally, we addressed, vaguely at times, the notion that competence in the juvenile justice system is inappropriately addressed. And I'd like for you to think just for a moment about what it means to be incompetent in juvenile delinquency court. Well, arguably the reason there is a juvenile delinquency court is because these folks are at some level incompetent for adult criminal court. And that to restore a juvenile offender, in a lot of cases, it simply means having them grow up and older to a point where they are competent for the purposes of legal definition. But currently, we apply the DUSCY standard, the adult standard, for competence to juvenile offenders. And that needs to be addressed. And we have to create the infrastructure to address it meaningfully. So at the end of the day, where we were was suggesting that assessment, education, diagnosis, appropriate treatment, aftercare, and perhaps for the purposes of this report, where we should really be is as a prologue to the prevention, intervention, and early involvement piece of Judge Kingsbury's group, because that really in the continuum of this report is where we belong. And that is not to suggest that we think our portion is particularly overly aspirational, and it certainly is not prescriptive, but does suggest that every county, large and small in this state, has the resources to do better than we're doing now, and we provide a blueprint not for a one-size-fits-all approach to fixing these problems, but allowing counties to identify within their own needs and resources a more appropriate way to deal with youth offenders.
Thank you very much, Kurt, and thank you all for not only all of your hard work, but your reports here today. I've had the great pleasure over the last 20 years as a judge and the opportunity to chair some working groups and task forces to see the staff work at the AOC. And each time I'm reminded in so many ways and at so many times how extraordinary that staff work is, how professional it is, how dedicated it is, how responsive it is. It's truly one of the finest group of people that you would ever have an occasion to work with. And we were very fortunate with our working group and our task force here today to have a tremendously dedicated group, lead staff Karen Moen and Arlie Lindberg, with great staff support from CFCC management, Diane Nunn, Charlene Deppner, Francine Byrne, and Nancy Taylor, along with other very valuable staff members, made all the difference in the world. I only wish that judges across the state could see firsthand what members of our task force saw in terms of the day-in and day-out ability of the AOC staff to take extraordinarily complex areas of the law and issues and to craft and help us craft the report that we think makes a great deal of sense, but without them, we really could not have put together in this amount of time what we needed to do. We want to thank all of them for their extraordinary work, not only for what they have done, but what they continue to do. And I should note that they really deserve a big round of applause for their extraordinary work this past 3 years. And I should note as well that great organizations and staffs don't just materialize out of thin air. People like Bill Vickery and Ron Overholt and the executive staff have put together a great organization that helps support efforts like this, and we appreciate it a great deal. Thank you. Well, I thank all of you for your attention during, again, a late afternoon presentation. We look forward to working with you in the future. Our task is ending. We have recommended that at some point there be an implementation group to work with you, hand in glove, to see what recommendations you believe should be put forward. About 60 of them directly impact the courts and would be something that we could work forward with. We have many stakeholders in the process who are anxious, at least on their end, to move forward with some of those recommendations, and together hopefully we can change a system that desperately needs changing. Thank you very much.
Justice Hill, I know I speak on behalf of counsel. When we look at the comprehensive work this committee has done, this Task Force for Criminal Justice Collaboration on Mental Health Issues, I remember when it was appointed 3 years ago. And just hearing the reports and reviewing the report to be received by Judicial Counsel reflects incredibly in-depth, comprehensive report and solutions that I hope truly become the best practice and the practice instead of aspirational. Because as you've described this continuum and this need, every single one of us, judges, justices, and lawyers, know exactly what you're talking about. We have all experienced this phenomenon. And so I know, I tell you with deep gratitude for examining this and making these recommendations to counsel. You've done phenomenal work. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Contra Costa also has a behavioral health court, and I have to say in reviewing the report, obviously every working group, it was apparent, was comprised of people who knew the issue, knew what was going on, had been and worked in the courts or been involved in the system, and I so appreciate the work of the committee and feel that this is such a good, strong base and a place for us to aspire to. And those of us that have these courts will work to achieve these things, and hopefully the council will be able to assist people in beginning courts that don't have them, because it is so beneficial to the communities, to the sheriffs, to get these people out of jail and into programs where they're going to be more productive. And the courts can help very much along those lines. And I would really like to commend the work of all the committee chairs here, all the working group chairs. Thank you very much. It's such an important area. It affects our justice system so much. And again, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bill and then Judge Wesley.
Justice Hill, I wanted to thank you for your generous comments of the work of the staff of the AOC, who I think have not only enjoyed working with you and the members of the committee, but I think had a real commitment to the issues, and I appreciate your recognition of them. And I also want to recognize that when the Council of State Governments Criminal Justice Mental Health Project wanted California to be one of the seven states, they also were very, very concerned that the state was too large and too complex. And so they had sort of a dual apprehension that, one, there wouldn't be an ability to have thorough and comprehensive recommendations that would be implementable in the process of going forward. And so they weren't sure the investment could work in California, but they didn't see how they could have a credible report if they did not have California involved in the activity at the same time. And representatives from CSG came out twice to meet to discuss their concerns and their apprehensions. And the leadership that you provided and the tremendous members of the committee and symbolized by the people who spoke on the panel today reflect, I think, the ability of California to deliver on these things and to provide a report that really could substantively change the quality of what's going on in our system as we try to implement these things. So thank you, and I know that nationally that this will have a great impact, as well as hopefully a tremendous impact here in California.
Thank you. Judge Wesley?
I want to compliment this task force. This is one of the things that the Judicial Council does really well, and that is put groups together to come up with solutions for things. And I hope we really latch on to this. When I started to read this report, I read it at night thinking it was one of those things I could go to sleep to. Unfortunately, it was so good. If you've practiced in criminal law or you've practiced in juvenile law, you just hit every one of these issues that gets to us, and we wonder, what are we going to do with this defendant or this minor? And you just identified so many of the problems. You stayed away from two areas, LPS, conservatorships, and mentally retarded, because the regional center is a problem. When they won't take a person, you don't know what to do with them. And I would hope that the Judicial Council recognizes that this report didn't cover those two areas, and that we, in the future, look at those so that we have a comprehensive, when we start looking at implementation, we are looking at comprehensively attacking these problems that are problems in the court. If your intention on the of your committee, your task force, was to set the stage for further discussion, I think you've done so brilliantly, and I hope we have further discussion on this, because it's so desperately needed in this state. Assuming at some point in the future the council is going to form some kind of implementation working force, I would hope that we would – there's 137 recommendations. I would hope that we would narrow what we start out with doing so that we can actually complete a task and get moving on these things, because they're in desperate need of movement on the part of the courts. And I think that we should focus on things the courts can actually do. There are a lot of recommendations in here that are beyond the court's purview, but there are things in here that the courts can actually do. Example, training around the state, identifying representatives in all 58 counties that we can teach best practices to, so that things that are being done in all counties are shared with respect to this, identifying resources that can be shared. All of those things can be done, and can be done fairly quickly with leadership from the judiciary. So if we focus on those things that we can do, I really think that we would be performing a great service. I would hope that we follow through on this and don't wait a long time. I agree with all of the speakers that this is an urgent area. I also agree, and I want to indicate that I read the comments by the California Mental Health Directors Association. And they're right. They say, well, you know, the task force did a great job, but we're really worried that it's pie in the sky because there's no money. They don't even have money for basic services. But maybe if we talk about this and get the issues out there, that maybe they will get money for basic services and maybe other services that are desperately needed. It may be cheaper to keep people out of custody than put them in custody and provide the services in custody. It has to be. So I applaud you. I think this is just a wonderful start. All the work that went into it, it's a wonderful start. We have to now do something with this report. So I hope we follow through. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge Wesley.
And there are three recommendations, I understand, in front of counsel, as laid out on page 2 under tab O. And part of what you're talking about, Judge Wesley, speaks to recommendation number 2 and number 3. So is there any further discussion, or do I hear a motion regarding these three recommendations? Because they do go hand in hand in hand.
Move approval of the three recommendations.
Second.
So Judge Soe, and I have 2 seconds from Judge O'Malley and Judge Wesley. All in favor of the three recommendations, items 1, 2, and 3 on page 2 behind tab O, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The matter carries. Thank you again very much for this hard-hitting report.
Thank you very much.